Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021. This is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And the call-in number is 347-857-3293. And what we're saying tonight is, this is an anatomy of oppression, which requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism. It's an analysis of the capitalist system. And what we're wondering is, will COVID-19 heighten the contradictions between the rich and the poor to match the contradictions of race between blacks and whites to such a degree that maybe both movements will coalesce? Something to think about, something to talk about. So without further ado, Brother Pointer, what's happening?
My brothers and sisters, thank you for tuning in this evening, because there is much to talk about. This week, I spoke to a young woman in Cleveland, and she said to me, there are so many issues to deal with. What do you see as the major problem? And that's how we came up with this week's discussion. And let me get into, will the COVID-19 heighten the contradiction of rich and poor? That is, the contradictions in this society between, as we in the movement, we political people talk about, the class issue, rich and poor. In the middle of COVID, we still have no movement towards a national health program. We still have the questions in the movement. What is it? How do we call it? What is the problem? Fascism or racism? And our question is, well, there are contradictions. There is a problem between the rich and the poor. We have a situation that deals with health. Although we should have been dealing with the question of a national health plan 20 years ago, we people of the left, but we did not. It was also predicted 10 years ago that there would be a pandemic. And I was hoping to have Ralph Schoenman, Maya Schoen, who predicted it on Pacifica, to play that program that they were talking about, the coming pandemic, and say, how is it that the left didn't get on that issue? That is the question of a national health program. And people, even with this pandemic, it's no longer looming, with this pandemic doing its destructive forces in the communities, still no cry from the people, from the workers, or from the left for a national health program. And we talk about how the poor, black and white poor, should come together to form a movement that would change this empire. And it is an empire, because we all know now capitalism doesn't work. But imperialism does. That is, you take some the riches of another country and you bring them to America and you make a society for people who have no color. For, as they started off with Northern Europeans, and then they extended it to a home for Southern Europeans. And then after we fought in this country to have the immigration things changed, the immigration laws, so that people of color could come to enjoy America, we find that there still is no movement of organization between people of color and people without color. We talk about the workers unite. Well, there hasn't been a situation where the workers feel they have to unite. And this contradiction continues. And we say, will the contradictions be looked at? Will they be dealt with by the people? All we can say is we hope so. We will continue to work at it. And this is a question that people should begin to deal with. If we say workers unite, we have to also ask the question, what will create the situation where workers feel they have to unite? COVID-19 has not created that situation. Many people die. Many people have no health plan. Many people will lose their homes because of no health plan, and you cannot dismiss a health debt or a college debt. Still, no movement of the workers uniting. And as I had mentioned, the question of race being the major question, the question of fascism being the major question. And looking at history, I have but one reference, and that is the reference of Portugal. Why Portugal? Portugal is a very poor country. Why Portugal? Because everyone recognizes as Portugal once being a fascist country, fascist leaders, fascist government. And at the same time they were a fascist government, they were involved in a colonial struggle in Africa. Their colonies in Africa were rebelling. And the revolution continued, and the colonists, the people in Africa, won. They defeated the Portuguese. And when the colonial empire fell, fascism fell. And yet today, the poor country of Portugal has a better health system, a national health system, and we, in the richest country in the world, do not have a health system, national health system. Is there a lesson in that history? And I say, brothers and sisters, it's worth thinking about the lessons of history and how does it apply to America, us, we, the people on the ground. And COVID-19 is not over for a lot of reasons. We don't know whether the vaccine is going to, if it is going to work well enough before COVID-19 mutates into something else and it starts all over again. These are the questions we must ask ourselves. And while this is happening, we must understand what is not happening socially and politically in America. And with that said, I turn the program over to our dear sister, Betty Davis. Sister Betty, what do you have for us this evening?
Well, as usual, to honor Sister Lynn, we always open our mics to the liberation poetry of Professor Louis. Professor Louis, thanks once again for gracing our doors. Your mic is open.
All right. Wake up. Wake up. Levantate. Wake up, man. Lost in the steel and cement of New York City, we have got to wake up. Lost in Monday to Friday, endless slavery, selling our precious lives for a few jive little dollars, we have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of TV or online commercials where white people and black people get along so good, all smiley, happy. Is this the country you actually live in? We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of TV or online soap operas, all happening in fine big houses where no one ever gets laid off, no one gets cut off welfare, No one wakes up in the winter with no heat, no hot water. The roach is in charge and the landlord in Florida hoping you will move so he can get more rent from the next tenant. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of TV or online watching super cops, really super killers, really just super schmucks wasting 11 guys a night with karate chops and automatic firepower. The good guys on these shows are just as nasty as the bad guys. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of TV or online where no one ever gets cheated by the electric company, cheated by the supermarket, cheated by the phone company, cheated by the health insurance company, cheated by the landlord, and cheated by the boss, all in the same day. We have got to wake up. Drinking Miller beer will not help you make it with beautiful, expensive women. It will only give you a beer belly and a headache. We have got to wake up. You will be loving it at McDonald's until they give you diabetes, high blood pressure, heart attack, stroke, and a freaking stomachache. We have got to wake up. Coca-Cola is not the real thing. It's a cheap chemical poison that eats up your stomach, rots your teeth, and makes scrambled eggs out of your brains. We have got to wake up. You will never own a new Mercedes SUV. If you buy one, you will find it on the street 3 weeks later with the battery ripped off, the radio ripped off, the tires ripped off, the catalytic converter ripped off, the windows broke, the insides burnt out, and you will still have 3 years of payments left to make. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of Hollywood fantasy movies. Everyone so rich and so clean, they never go to work on the number two train in the rush hour. We have got to wake. Do not sleep life away in front of TV or online news that says Muslim people in Iran are our enemy and the Exxon oil company is our friend. The Exxon company paid for the news program in the first place. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away saying the boss is a good guy because he buys you coffee in the morning. Every single thing he buys is with money that you made for him. We have got to wake up. Do not sleep life away in front of the Bachelor, the 6 o'clock news, the Bachelorette, Donald Trump, Pepsi Cola, Budweiser beer, or the Citibank that never sleeps but stays up all night, ripping you off while you sleep. We have got to wake up. We are ripped off, bought off, paid off, laid off, stuffed off, turned off, jerked off, more off than on. We are oppressed, depressed, impressed, excessed, compressed, and repressed. We are discriminated, medicated, enervated, inundated, overpopulated, masturbated, castrated, incriminated, and incarcerated. We are analyzed, advertised, anesthetized, hypnotized, spiritualized, psychedelicized, polarized, depoliticized, and lobotomized. We must not sleep life away in front of TV or online dreamland until eternal rest funeral homes comes to roll you out to the cemetery in Long Island on the installment plan your family pays later, a real layaway plan. You lay, they pay. We have got to wake up. Yo, man, we are alive. Every day, the wind blows the leaves in the tree. Every day, the sun lights up the sky. Every night, the darkness falls quiet on everything. We are not separate pieces of someone's big money machine. We're all one human family going back thousands of years, all colors of the rainbow. We have got to wake up. Yo, man, we are alive. The kids play on the kitchen floor. The touch of your sweetheart at night. We were born to breathe clean air, drink fresh water, dance all night without the radio. We were born to move together, to remove forever this money-mad corporate monster robbing and poisoning us every day. We were born to eat the fruit off the trees, the plants from the ground. We were born to respect the old people, to be kind to the children, to respect the earth we walk on. We were born to make a brand new world for the babies to share what we have all day long and love all night deep into the midnight hour. But first, from the get-go, number one, from Jump Street, in the beginning, before anything else, we have got to wake up.
Thank you so much for that, Professor Louis. Professor Louis says it, poetry educates and entertains at the same time. And once again, will COVID-19 heighten the contradictions between rich and poor? That is the class struggle, to match the contradictions of the color struggle, that is race, to a degree, where both movements, as Professor Louis asks us or tells us, to wake up, come together, and change this monster system. Sister Betty.
All right, before we go to our special discussion tonight regarding one of our warriors, Mamiya, I see Sister Anne and Brother Henry are on the line, and I think there's one other caller that's supposed to be calling in regarding this serious, serious emergency. We have a special guest in the house. We're going to open her mic. And what you should know is this organization is called Mothers on the Inside. And Sammy Werkhauser is the co-founder of Mothers on the Inside and a member of the Justice for Women Task Force. She did 5 years in prison on a 12-year-to-life sentence before her conviction overturned and indictment dismissed by the New York State Supreme Court Third Judicial Department. She is a campaign organizer with New York Campaign for Alternatives to Isolated Confinement in the push to pass the Halt Solitary Bill. Sammy meets with senators, assembly members on a weekly basis, always pushing for the humane treatment of pregnant incarcerated women. Sammy speaks out on the horrors of conditions for women in prison, as well as the torture of solitary confinement. She's a member of the Human Rights Campaign and the NAACP, and she gave birth to twins while incarcerated. Her co-founder, Aisha Horton, is a member of the same Justice for Women Task Force. She works very closely also with the Halt Solitary Confinement Campaign and is a lifelong Rochesterian. Aisha has been taking part of the Daniel Prude protest while advocating for incarcerated women. Mrs. Horton is previously incarcerated also, having served 5.5 years on an 8-year sentence before having the conviction overturned due to civil rights violations. Ms. Werkhauser, your mic is open. Unfortunately, I don't see your partner on unless she's calling on a different line. As soon as I see her line, I will open it up also, but you can begin.
Okay, we're both on this call. Aisha, can you speak so they can hear you?
Hello, everyone.
Yes, we hear the both of you. Continue, please.
Okay, well, I just want to, wow, that introduction made me tear up a little bit because you announced us in such a regal way, and I'm just thinking about the way that Aisha and I met. And we met at Bedford Hills Correctional Facility, and we met in the lowliest of places, and that was actually cleaning the shower stalls on the 120A unit. And so it was the week that I had just given birth. And the officer was being really tough on me, and I was crying. And Aisha saw it, and she said, "Don't let them break you." And we have been friends ever since. So I hear all these things that, if you hear someone else say back to you, like what you've been working on and stuff, I just got a little emotional because Aisha and I, we started with humble beginnings, so I'm going to let Aisha speak because she is awesome, and we just want to thank you for letting us be here today.
Well, we thank you for being here because of the pictures we want to present on this program. So please proceed.
Well, Samantha and I, which is my best friend, we met in prison. She recently gave birth. She was new to the unit. I was there maybe 4 or 5 months before her. And she came into the shower. The officer instructed us to scrub these showers. And if anyone knows anything about Bedford Hills Correctional Facility, which is the only maximum security facility for females in the state of New York, it's horrible. It's in shambles. So we're down in this moldy, disgusting shower on our hands and knees, and she's crying and bawling like a baby. And all I could think about was, don't let them break you, because that's what they try to do, is break you, break your spirit, break, make you feel like you have no hope. And so I was just giving her a piece of my encouragement, because, you know, I come from the inner city, so my skin was a little tougher than hers. So,
a lot tougher, a lot tougher, a lot tougher. That's the truth.
Yes, I'm. You know, I've been pretty much fighting injustice my whole life. So she was shocked, and I wasn't. Put it that way.
Well, so, will you tell us what you're doing with your organization? And
right now,
I hope you give us a website so that people can see you, see the faces behind the voices, as well as read what you are about. So would you give us a brief synopsis of what you are doing?
Yes, absolutely. So I just want to tell you that when we're thinking about women who are incarcerated, when we incarcerate a woman, we are really and truly incarcerating an entire family, because we know that women are the caretakers. If you look at the men's prisons, you're going to see that they're completely filled. Everybody's visiting the men because the women are visiting the men. Contrastly, if you look at the women's prison floors, there's so many empty chairs, and that was something that really stuck with me. We need to make sure that we're taking care of the women, because incarceration affects generations. And if you have a loved one that is incarcerated, you know the struggles, and you only know if you know. So what happened with Aisha and I is that both of our convictions were overturned. We were so thrilled that God saw fit to release us. And so we know how many sisters that we left behind. And many of our friends are serving 5, 10, 15, 25, 50 years to life sentences. And after a good portion of time, families are tired of taking care of their loved one, and the support maybe wanes a little bit. And so Aisha and I, you know, we really wanted to do something for our sisters. And so she's going to tell you some of the actions that we've been doing.
Well, we're a grassroots group, so we have nothing. We're pretty much, we advocate for the women. We find someone on the outside that would like to help and assist and connect them with a woman on the inside and help the woman to meet her needs, whatever the needs were, be it soap. Right now we're doing an action, and we have collected over 800 bars of soap, and we've had it delivered to all three female facilities in the state of New York. A couple of months back, we did a underwear drive, and we did it for 6 months, and we had them delivered to two of the facilities. We just, if Mary needs a coat, we find a woman on the outside that can possibly help Mary out with a coat or a sweater or a pair of underwear. These
right.
women are there. They're dying. We lived there. We saw it.
Right.
So we know the needs of these women. And we're going to
help.
And
well, continue, please.
I was just going to say, so we know that the women inside are struggling. And so what we're trying to do here is we're trying to find the needs. So we are in contact with the women through the JPay, which is the email system, and also through phone calls and snail mail letters. And so, for example, if a woman needs shampoo and she needs new underwear and she needs socks, what we do is we find someone who is part of our group, you know, someone who has resources that purchases those things, we match them up, and that person sends the stuff to the woman directly. The reason why we did the underwear drive is because upon reception upstate at the Broome County Jail, women were having to step inside of used underwear And so we knew about that, and some of us had lived that. And so what we did is we collected underwear for a six-month period, and just last week we were able to distribute 2,000 pairs of underwear to the Broome County Sheriff, and it was a magnificent thing because all of those women were given a package of underwear, and they have a storage room now filled with clean underwear, and they're not going to be stepping into stained underwear. And that might not be something that people at home are thinking about, you know, incarcerated women and their underwear. But I assure you that if you are living in prison, this is something that you're thinking about and stressing about. So Aisha and I are really just trying to do things that are humane for the women. And we both want to do everything that we can to speak out about the horrors of solitary confinement. Both of us have suffered solitary confinement, and Aisha can speak to you a little bit about that.
Well, I did approximately 90 days during my entire incarceration of solitary confinement. It's a mind-bending experience. It left an imprint on me that I will never forget. Aside from the incarceration, there's hunger, there's mental anguish, there's despair, there's all types of feelings that go through you, and it's torture. So we've been working daily and speaking to legislator and assemblymen to try to get this bill passed, the halt solitary bill, to find humane alternatives to long-term instead of isolation. Humans are not singular creatures. We're supposed to mingle. So that's what we've been doing. But they can like us on our, we have a Facebook page, Mothers on the Inside.
Tell us about your Facebook page and how we get to it.
Sammy?
Yes.
Tell us about your Facebook page.
Okay. So if you go on Facebook, up to the search bar, the name of our page is Mothers on the Inside. And our email address is super easy. It's just mothersontheinside@gmail.com. So if you're listening to this and you think that you can send some Dove soap our way, feel free to go to the website, I'm sorry, the Facebook page, or send us an email and we'll tell you exactly what we need. I also just want to let you know that with regards to the HALT solitary bill, the reason why this bill is so important and why Aisha and I are getting it passed is because it will make sure that no one will be in solitary confinement more than 15 days in a 60-day period. And so that will follow the Nelson Mandela rule, which was accepted by the United Nations. Also, pregnant women, people with mental illness, and people with physical disabilities will not have to go to solitary confinement. And I just want to let your listeners know that at the time of my conviction in 2013, I was pregnant with twins. Due to a verbal altercation that I had with another woman, an officer put me into protective custody. At 5 months pregnant, I went into labor with the twins, and my baby girl, Jacinta, lived 22 minutes, and the baby boy survived, and he's 7 years old today. So this is a story that I share with senators and assembly people, because to this day, pregnant women can be placed in solitary confinement, and that is an absolute and terrible horror. When you think about a woman who is growing a human being and she's in a cage for 23 hours a day, it's absolutely obscene. New York State is supposed to be a progressive state, but I want you to know that it absolutely is not in this particular area. So if you are interested at all in getting involved with helping the push of the HALT solitary bill, you can go to www.nycaic. That's NYCAIC. NYIC.org, and that's the New York Campaign for Alternatives to Isolated Confinement. And they are really, really pushing hard to get this passed. And we have all of the votes that we need on both sides to pass this bill. We just need Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Carl Heastie to bring this bill to the floor. So we always, when Aisha and I speak about the work that we do, we always just want to remind people about this bill because it will really change the fabric of incarceration. So many people, when they come home, are forever changed. They have post-traumatic stress disorder, post-incarceration syndrome, something as simple as the jingling of keys or seeing a blue shirt that's like a corrections officer can really, really upset a person. And also, you know, some people, when they come home, they don't even want to leave their house. They're so, you know, institutionalized. So there's so many things to think about when we're thinking about incarceration. And if your listeners can reach out and help Mothers on the Inside, we would be so grateful. And we thank you.
Well, we thank you for bringing reality of the prison, the incarceration system, to our listeners. And this is a program of political prisoners as well as those who are prisoners of a political system. So political victims, we call them, and we have political prisoners. And you have just heard from political victims. We on the outside must never forget or lose contact with the people on the inside. It is so important. Thank you for that. And hopefully your message will go far and wide this program. Sister Betty.
I just want to say to Mothers on the Inside, we respect your struggle. We respect your strength. And we hope you will continue the struggle. And feel free, whenever you're having an event, to call us and put out on the media link that we have. We are more than that. This nation has more humans incarcerated than any nation in the world. We understand that, and we know what it means to the future. So thank you again, Aisha, and thank you so much for your dedication, Sammy, and keep up the good work. Without
thanks
further ado, yes, go ahead.
Thanks for having us, and we appreciate please you guys for paving the way. Because you guys have been doing it for so long. We're just picking up where you guys
opened the door for us. Thank you.
please continue, and this encourages us to continue. Sister Betty.
Okay, without further ado, you know we have an emergency for our brother Mamia Abu-Jamal, and we have Brother Henry on the line. We also have Sister Ann, who, after he makes his presentation, will continue with the rest of her announcements. If you have been paying attention to New York City Jericho emails, you know there have been some horrific reports coming out, and Sister Ann has been on top of it and telling all of us, informing all of us. Brother Henry, we will begin with you.
Okay, greetings, brothers and sisters. This information comes from the campaign to bring Mamia home at bringmamiahome@gmail.com. This is an urgent press conference at D.A. Krasner's office Wednesday, March 3rd at 11 a.m. An emergency action was called, and on 227, where over 70 people showed up outside of D.A. Larry Krasner's office in Philadelphia within 24-hour notice, despite the harsh weather and conditions, to call for Mamia's immediate release and treatment. The immense power of the people also flooded the prison telephone line, leading to Mamia getting tested for COVID. The test came back negative. However, we know from past experience that the prison medical system is untrustworthy, and Mamia still requires medical attention for the serious symptoms he is experiencing, such as breathing, tightness in his chest pains. He's experiencing such as tightness in his chest pains and labored breathing. We are waiting for more updates from Mamia. join the movement to free Mumia for an in-person press conference in front of DA Larry Krasner's office tomorrow. That's Wednesday, March 3rd at 11 a.m. In addition, for more information, you can contact Mobilization for Mumia, and that's lowercase letters with the number 4 in between. Again, Mobilization for Mumia at gmail.com, and the telephone number is 215-724-1618. That's Mobilization for Mumia. And again, the press conference is Wednesday, March 3rd, 2021 at 11 a.m. in front of DA Larry Krasner's office, 3 Penn Square. And we're urging all those people who are able to be there to demonstrate in front of Larry Krasner's office. This effort to medically kill Mumia has happened before, and we must stand in opposition to it. Mumia is deserving of compassionate release under his condition, and we are urging that the state government of Pennsylvania release Mumia for the following reasons. Also, you can contact the Mahanoy Prison Superintendent Bernadette Mason at 570-773-2158 and insist he be treated for COVID, push for his compassionate release, and be assertive about it without being disrespectful. This man has been unlawfully imprisoned for 40 years, and he's overdue for release. And so, again, we're asking all people to come out who are able to and support the effort to have Mumia released from prison.
Thank you so much for that, Henry Higgins. And please try to act on that, my brothers and sisters, because there are people from New York, their organization, they've been organizing to get as many people there as possible. Are you finished, Henry?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And next we have Ann Lamb on the line to give us more. Ann Lamb of Jericho, New York. Ann Lamb, your microphone is open.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always an honor to be here with you folk. I was just posting the Mumia information up on jerichomoy.org. You can also watch a live stream of this press conference and rally tomorrow at linktree.com/Mumia. That's linktr.ee/Mumia. I say just finished posting it to jerichomoy.org, so the information is there, and the entire little press release is also there. And then, of course, we must continue to call these phone numbers. Oh, the one thing is if you click on this link tree, which I did do, Mumia, they have the event for tomorrow, but they put the wrong date on it. It says March 6th, but I know it's tomorrow. So not to worry when it says RSVP there. Just click the link and do it. If you can't make it there, you know, you can watch it live on Zoom, I would assume. And we do need to still keep calling all those phone numbers. This is really a really serious situation here, folks. So we need to talk to the superintendent at SCI in Mahanoy, and her name is Bernadette Mason, and the prison, which is exactly the same number, 570-773-2158. And we're also calling Philly DA Larry Krasner at 267-456-1000, and we're also calling PA Doc Secretary John Wetzel at 717-728-2573. You don't have to remember all these phone numbers. Just go to jerichomy.org. It's right on the first page. Can't miss it. Beautiful flyer. Whoever did the flyer did a great job. Anyway, this is very serious news and life-threatening, of course, and we definitely know that the state's idea of what they want to do with our prisoners is to murder them. So it behooves us to be very vigilant and be insistent and persistent and consistent. Make those phone calls, folks. We save lives with phone calls. We have done it before, and we will do it again. We're not having this nonsense. Now, just as I was going to start with something different, but, you know, this came up. But 1 year ago today, we lost one of our really great, historic freedom fighter, Don Rafael Cancel Miranda, right? who died at the age of 89 on March 2nd of 2020, who was an amazing human being, and who also spent lots of time in federal prison with many of our current and former political prisoners, including Leonard Peltier. They were really tight. They spent a lot of time in the same prison. And I just wanted people to, you know, do a little presente here. I'm going to say, Rafael Cancel Miranda, presente.
Presente. Yes. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm not finished. I have an update on Matulu. So we just finally got a recent update on Matulu. I just received it yesterday. And it seems that we are having real trouble with mail. Are we surprised, right? This is from Tulu Support Group, and they say, mail going into and out of the prison seems to be subject to long delays. After a month in transit, we received a health and legal update from Dr. Shakur that you can read on his website, which is MatuluShakur.com. As always, he cannot personally respond to every letter, but he is receiving mail. So now they're going to try to do another thing like they've been done in PA with this smart communications nonsense with the mail. They want to start doing this in the federal prisons as well, where your mail will be scanned and you have to read it on kiosks in the prison. Hasn't taken effect yet. That was one of the Trump administration things. Maybe it could be overturned before it happened. So anyway, the legal health update in sum is that Matulu was notified last month that he was denied parole after the hearing in October, which we already knew. Our legal team immediately appealed the decision on multiple grounds and is actively exploring other avenues to argue for Dr. Shakur's release. He seems to have mostly recovered from both the stem cell transplant for the stage 4 bone cancer as well as from COVID that he contracted shortly thereafter. He's a strong man. Unfortunately, we know that this cancer is incurable and COVID can recur, so we are continuing to struggle to free him from prison just as hard, if not more so. We appreciate that people are moved by the film Dope is Death and want to know how to lend support. Just in case anybody doesn't know, the film Dope is Death is all about the Lincoln Detox Center, which was co-founded by Dr. Matulu Shakur, other members of the Black Panther Party, and the Young Lords 50 years ago at Lincoln Hospital right here in the Bronx. That's why it's called the Lincoln Detox Center, and they saved many lives. So people who saw that film, you know, were motivated to want to help. So people have been donating online, which is great. And another way to support them right now is to have this nice graphic. So I'm going to be putting that up on the website, too, momentarily. But I really wanted people to know that there is some movement here going on with Matulu. We can never give up hope. And, you know, if he can stay strong, we can stay strong. I believe he signed his letter Mud and Water. I was like, okay. Now, I have not given my little report, which I always do, COVID-19 in prisons. This is, like, amazing. The people in prison in this country, we have 383,754 people living in prisons who have contracted COVID-19, right? So that is a huge amount of people, and that's at least, because all these numbers are not necessarily accurate, and all of these numbers are not necessarily, you know, complete, because a lot of prisons, you know, just like Cuomo did with saying all these people who died in nursing homes and didn't get counted as dying in nursing homes because they died in the hospital, same kind of thing goes on in prisons, you know. So there have been at least 2,446 deaths from coronavirus reported among people who must reside in these horrible, horrible death camps. So that is going on. But I was very happy to see the update on Matulu because I had been worried about what was happening with him. And, go to this linktree.com/Mumia if you can't make it to Philadelphia tomorrow at 11 a.m. at 3 Penn Square. You can definitely watch the live stream so you'll have an idea of what's happening. I'm sure there'll be all kinds of updates. And hopefully we might have heard from Mumia by then to see what he himself has to say, because it sounds really, really horrible. And we certainly don't want to lose anybody else inside. We've lost more than enough people already. And I also wanted to say to those sisters who were speaking earlier, who were working on Halt Solitary and collecting soap for the women and everything, I know Bedford Hills really well. I've been to Bedford Hills to visit my friend Joyce Powell, who they may or may not know, who's been there for a while now. So if you know Joyce, she sends her regards. And I'm sure if you know Joyce, you're sending her yours. And her birthday's coming up. Friday is Reverend Joy Powell's birthday. So if people want to take the time, even if a card gets there a little late, if you don't have JPay, where you can send by email, which anybody can do, but take the time and, you know, write her a nice birthday card and put it in the mail. Even if she gets it after her birthday, that's not a problem. She's going to be participating in an event that's been put together by students at UCLA out in California, and they're doing a whole thing for, you know, Women's Month, March, and they particularly wanted somebody to speak on her behalf. So I asked her who she would like to speak on her behalf. Her son, Rakim, is going to speak on her behalf at this event on Friday, which I will also be shortly posting to the website. So we have a lot of stuff going on around our political prisoners, which is good in a way. You know, not good that, you know, people are so ill. And don't forget, we still have to make those phone calls also for WrestleMania shows. And, you know. And, thank you.
Yeah,
so
we got
much
a long
night. That is our plan for this year. What's the call? Free them all.
And remember, folks, this is a program for political prisoners, for political victims, victims of a political system. And so, as we say over and over again, let the Jericho website be your good book, the book you go to support and do justice. Sister Betty.
We want to thank Sister Ann because she does stay on top of the research. And you know that enlightenment can lead to liberation. You got to know what you're fighting against. You got to know what you're up against in this struggle. And we're truly, truly grateful for those reports. We have to continue. We've extended the time because so many people have gotten on the call. And we see Louisiana is in the house. And we cannot, you know, not leave enough time for them. Because what's happening in New York is mirrored in Louisiana. And what's happening in Louisiana is mirrored in New York City in terms of it being a slave state. That is the truth. Why don't we just say what it is? Slave state with people in death camps. So without further ado, however, before we go to the rest of our speakers, Sister Dolores, your mic is open.
Thank you, Betty. This is not about political prisoners, but it's about an article I read in this past Sunday's New York Times. And it's entitled, The Campaign to Cancel Wokeness, How the Right is Trying to Censor Critical Race Theory. Wokeness refers to, you know, being woke. Which is how we define things now in terms of what somebody knows or doesn't know. So the definition of critical race theory is the intellectual tradition undergirding concepts like white privilege and microaggressions, and it's often blamed for fomenting what critics call cancel culture. And it's an ironic quest to cancel the promotion of critical race theory in public forums. When Trump was in office, he began to identify all contracts or other agency spending related to any training on critical race theory as being un-American propaganda. A month later, the conservative government in Britain declared some uses of critical race theory in education as being illegal. We don't want teachers to teach their white pupils about white privilege and inherited racial guilt. This is what they said in Britain, the conservative government, and including any school which teaches these elements of critical race theory or which promotes partisan political views, such as defunding the police, without offering a balanced treatment of opposing views, is breaking the law. That's in Britain. And then it says some in France took up the fight as well. French politicians, high-profile intellectuals, and journalists are warning that progressive American ideas, specifically on race, gender, and post-colonialism, are undermining their society. It says once Biden became president, he undid Trump's critical race theory ban, but lawmakers in several states have proposed their own prohibitions. An Arkansas legislator introduced a pair of bills, one banning the teaching of the New York Times 1619 Project curriculum, and the other mixing classes, events, and activities that encourage a division between resentment of or social justice for specific groups of people. What is not appropriate is being able to theorize, use specifically critical race theory, this bill says. Now, we have Republicans also in West Virginia and Oklahoma. They've introduced bills banning schools, and in West Virginia's case, state contractors from promoting divisive concepts, including claims that the United States is fundamentally racist or sexist. A New Hampshire Republican also proposed a divisive concept banning critical race theory, saying that the we need to have a hearing on it. Now, Kimberly Crenshaw, you know, she's a pioneering legal scholar who teaches at both UCLA and Columbia, has watched with alarm the attempts to suppress an entire intellectual movement. It was she who came up with the name critical race theory when organizing a workshop in 1989. She also coined the term intersectionality. The commitment to free speech seems to dissipate when the people who are being gagged are folks who are demanding racial justice, she says. Many of the intellectual currents that would become critical race theory emerged in the 1970s out of the disappointment with incomplete work of the civil rights movement and cohered along radical law professors in the 1980s. The movement's central insights that racism is structural rather than just a matter of interpersonal bigotry is now conventional wisdom, at least on the left. It had concrete practical applications leading, for example, to legal arguments that housing laws or employment criteria could be racist in practice, even if they weren't racist in intent. I'm going to stop here because it's a couple more pages long, but I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention.
Well, thank you so much for that, Dolores. And when we have the question of black history, the very fact that you recognize that there is a history that has been hidden, history that is not talked about, tells the whole story. And now we have a backlash. They know it is, but they don't want to talk about it. And all you have to know is America was a land that had people, and they were exterminated. Free land, the land that was rich, and they imported Africans to build an economy. And there is, I know these people would be very upset with the group of historians who say America is a history of people of color. And without the people of color, it would not be the same America. Well, you don't have to be a genius to understand that, but there is a reaction against it. Otherwise, the denial of reality of history is taking place where once we say that we understand that there is something missing in the history, another group comes up and said, I ask you not to tell me. They don't want old. And so the struggle continues. Continue with these facts, Sister Dolores, and we will continue to educate and entertain. Sister Betty.
The reason what Sister Dolores is telling us is important is that if you know a problem is man-made or woman-made, then a man and a woman can solve that problem. If these people are responsible for this false science, it is our job to combat that by any means necessary. So first you got to know the problem. You got to name the problem correctly. That's what Queen Mother Moore taught us. And then you deal with it. You deal with everybody else who's responsible for it. And you can't stop until the problem is really solved. All right, without further ado, Sister Gwen is in the house, and I thank you, Sister Dolores. And Dolores and everybody else on this call, put March 16th, Tuesday evening, in your calendar. We will celebrate the life of Lynn Stewart Presente. And Dolores, you'll be one of the speakers. You were there with her when she transitioned.
Right.
Sister Gwen, the mic is open. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Seem to be doing that a lot this evening. I did just what I wanted to do. Okay, I believe it's Louisiana.
Louisiana United International.
Hey. I'm here.
Yes.
Good evening, everyone. Oh, wow. This is so much impactful information, especially with the month of March. You know, just learning about all the exciting things that's going to be happening across the country for the month of the woman in celebration, our powerful women out there. And I would just like to say, Betty, Sister Betty, your name is on the top of that list, right along with many, many others. I appreciate you and Brother Ralph so much. But I heard you say earlier that, you know, this is about political prisoners. And I want to let everyone out there know that, you know, we just need the information on who to call for our brothers and sisters that are being held as political prisoners. We have a phone banking list where we do phone bliss here in Louisiana, and we will call anywhere in the country. All we need is to know who, on behalf of who we're calling for, and who to call. And you can communicate that information via email. My email is info@LAUnitedEye.org. That's info@LAUnitedEye.org. Get the information from Sister Betty or Brother Raph so that we can be a part of the phone bliss. And I know that works. It's very powerful. It have worked here several times in the state of Louisiana, that when we call and bombard the prisons or the court DA's office or the sheriff department, they really get nervous when those calls start coming in, and it holds them accountable. It backs them up against the wall, and it means a lot to the loved ones of whoever, on behalf of whoever family member that we're calling on. I just want to say that this is something that we all can do together. With Pastor Victor, you know, we're doing the phone bliss here quite often. It have backed them up against the wall, but we also have to be prepared for retaliation when we do those things too, because that's what they have done here to Pastor Victor. They have put him inside of a mental ward inside of the prison, which we all know that people are being just tortured inside of those mental wards with all types of drugs. They're drugging them up. And the last call that I got from Pastor Victor a few days ago, that they were in there. He couldn't get any sleep that night because they were throwing feces and urine mixed with shaving cream on each other all night long. And what happened is that the guards came in and they pepper sprayed everybody, and then one man was carried out with a hemorrhage on the brain, because when that pepper spray, you can't breathe, and, you know, it was just horrific for him going through that ordeal. And he shared with me that, you know, his eyes have seen things that he never should have seen. His ears had heard things that he never should have been allowed to hear. So this is torture. This is torment for him. And I just want everybody to know that we can use all the support that we can get. We're asking people to join up, you know, become a member of Louisiana United International. It's a $25 a year membership that would support us a lot. You can just give, Sister Betty and Brother Raph your information so that we can reach out to you and make those contacts whenever we have some type of action item going on. And if it ain't but a dollar, you know, just donate to these causes and these organizations. We appreciate it so much.
Well, Sister Belinda, before you go, I think you have an ally in the house. Brother Dennis, opened your mic. Did you want to make a few...
Yeah, Uhuru, it's so interesting and refreshing to come on a broadcast such as yours, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph. Every week you're very, very, you should be professors. That's what you all are. You're professors. And everybody that comes on, the poetry is so, sublime and so surreal. I want to talk about, you mentioned imperialism, and we're seeing it. You know, we've not only lived, this is not a democracy to us or me or many of us. It is a dictatorship. You know, I'm very, when I listen to details such as the ladies in prison with soiled underwear, when I listen to what happened to Pastor Victor in prison in a mental ward, when I listen to Brother Mamir dying, how inhumane act. I got to wonder about the psyche of any individual that could be so cruel without a conscience, have so much nihilism and no soul that they could do this to man, woman, child, and then call us animals. We're such the royal people of the world. I'm speaking of us, and I do cry because this is very emotional for me. All of our lives, Brother Ralph, Sister Belinda Parker Brown, I've got two sisters, one from Ohio and one from Norfolk, Virginia, who have all struggled most of our lives, like all poor and especially black people. And you wonder, when you look at, or I looked at today, the Senate hearing, they will not hold themselves accountable. They will not do to each other, but what they do to us, the laws that they put on us, this chastisement and abuse to the death on us, you wonder, how have we lived so long? I have an answer. We have lived so long because we are the first. We are the first people. We are the real royals in the world. What came out of the dark was the light. I watch people, these do-gooders, that say that they want to help us. And they come into the fold just to take over. They come into your midst pretending to be your friend that sell you out. I've seen this all of my life, as we all have. I don't know how many tears any of us have cried. I can't imagine we all go home at night and there's some tears. And we do call out to our ancestors. You know, Jesse Jackson said, what, how long, not long? I said, how long, and it's going on. This generational curse of imperialism and fascism and this so-called racism that was created. We weren't born this way. They weren't born this way. Well, maybe they were. They grew up with it in their DNA. When I look at the way that the harsh ways that we're innocent people, we are innocent people who have been brought into a land, kidnapped, brought into this land, looked at as subhuman. How dare you? How dare you look at us, such royal entities, as fathers? I learned so much from you all, and I listen to everybody that I've come in contact with. I'm so grateful. Excuse me, I do get emotional. I'm very grateful that there are other people that help keep me up, because there are times that there are breaking points. There are times where there are snapping points. There are times that we want to do things, because we do not love these conditions. And then when you talk about the prison inmates, the political prisoners, the innocent victims that have gone to prison just speaking out, how dare you?
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. And as our dear sister, and when she speaks, and when people say, what to do under these conditions, answer always was the same. Join. And you are joining us and allowing us to join you. You into this program, and we do give you the thanks. And thank you so much for coming on, and this continues, and we will continue.
Hey, Brother Dennis, you inspire us. Have your humanity. And one of the things I like about Sister Ann's Jericho website, put out an article about the Wake Institution. Sister Belinda, before we end, did you want to make a few more comments before we go to the next speaker?
Hello, Sister Betty.
You want to give a few closing comments before we to the next speaker?
Yes, Sister Betty. I just want everyone to know how much we really appreciate you all, and that we would want you to go and to our website at www.launited.org and read about us, share our information, you know, like and comment. That means a lot to us to know that you're out there and you're watching us, and that you're supporting the work that we're doing here in Louisiana. And we're inviting everyone to come to Louisiana. Be a part of this mighty, mighty movement, and that we're going to win this fight. There's no doubt in our mind that we're already winning, and Pastor Victor will be free, and hopefully we will have that good news here pretty soon that they cannot hold him, and that, you know, he's going to be a sign and a wonder when we elect him to be our 5th Congressional Congress and go to Washington, D.C. on behalf of all of this corruption, especially when it comes to our judicial system, and that is so corrupt here in the state of Louisiana. We want to put these people in jail for the atrocities and the wrong that they have done, especially to Pastor Victor and his family, but many, many others. Thank you so much, Brother Raph and Sister Betty.
Well, thank you so much. And when you mention return to Louisiana, yes, we will return to Louisiana.
Ooh, yes.
That's the matter. If you look at your history, many people will say they're not going to study it in Britain or New Hampshire, but we know that history. And, yes, Louisiana, if you study that history, that is the key. That is part of the economy of this foul country. We will return, and we will win. Sister Betty.
All right. Sister Belinda, we respect you. We respect the struggle that you have waged for so long, so many times by yourself. And you can call in any time and update us. And hopefully, as they say, inshallah, we will join you in New Orleans. Without further ado, I want to open up the mic for Brother Joel. He is someone who goes way, way back, Youth Against War and Fascism, fighter, an anti-war, anti-imperialist, and anti-capitalist. Joel, your mic is open. And to the rest of you, again, I want to remind you, March 16th, Tuesday, from 9 to 10:30, we expect you to be here to celebrate the life of our dear comrade, Sister Lynn. Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Yes. Joel. Hello?
Yes, we hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm listening to the show, and it just strikes me how much this show really goes to the to look under the hood and look really deep, take a really deep look at the realities of the system and my problem system as we face it. There's an old saying that says that if you want to know the truth about its the country, what you should look at are its prisons. And who's in the prisons? Why are they there? And what are these prisons really about? And to what degree do these prisons make prisoners of all of us? Are they really just one layer. You know, as a reaction,
Hello? It's difficult to hear you. Something is happening. Could you change position?
I think maybe this will be better.
This is much better. Much better.
Oh, okay. I mistakenly had it on speakerphone, for which I apologize. Although sometimes I've noticed that on some phone calls, the signal gets bulky and I get a little bit suspicious that interference may be coming in from the outside. But in this case, I think I just left the speaker button on. Anyway, so the idea is that if you want to know the realities and the depths of the realities of a political system or the way a country or society is run, the place to look is at the prisons and the prison's relationship to the rest of society, which in a certain way makes the entire society into a prison. You know, if you've ever been a prisoner, you know that in that there are different strata of it's called stratification as part of a so-called science called penology, and they have what they call stratified privileges. And you know, you have general population, you have solitary confinement, you have death row, and a lot of different strata in between, like they can take away your movie privileges for the once-a-week movies that they show, and so on. And then and then there are different types of regimens. There's medium security, maximum security, and minimum security. And that's really what the streets of a country like this are becoming more and more like. Like, people are in minimum security, but they're still in a prison environment. And if they and then through the layers of stratified privilege, they're threatened with being put in a under restrictions, or being put in a minimum security prison, all the way to a maximum security prison and solitary confinement within that, and other punishments within the prison besides mere confinement, like the dietary restrictions that you're under when you're in a prison, the infamous fake medical attention that you get when you're in a prison. And we see now how the results of that combine with the COVID Holocaust. And I say Holocaust, excuse me? I say Holocaust because, first of all, you know, when you look at the Nazi death camps, you hear about gas chambers and stuff, but many more prisoners were killed with diseases. For example, typhus, a massive typhus epidemic was constantly running through the Nazi concentration camps. And sometimes, you know, it's like we live in a galaxy called the Milky Way, but we didn't know what galaxies were like until we looked at other galaxies, like the Andromeda Galaxy, which is the closest. And then we could figure out what the Milky Way was really all about. It was not just, it was billions of stars. And the same thing when you look at another country, like Nazi Germany, for example. That's how you can learn about what really goes on in the United States, although that's held up as the extreme example. That only lasted for 14 years, and the United States has maintained slavery really through four centuries in one form or another, and even taught many of the Nazis everything that they knew about how to stratify people, turn people against each other, and all the way up to rounding people up and mass murdering people that were chosen on a racial basis. And this is something that, like, this is supposed to be the example or something, but not at all when you look at the similarities. And the the difference between typhus, COVID-19, and the effect that it's having, especially on people of oppressed races, prisoners, and so on, is that while typhus fever was used to kill a lot of people, COVID-19 was actually invented by the biological warfare division of the U.S. government. It was actually invented. Typhus was not invented by the Nazis. It was used, it was already there. This was invented to, and this is one thing that we forget, because most of the discussion centers on the vaccines, the treatments, and so on, the quarantines, the confinements, lockdowns, as if the government was trying to do everything in its power to minimize this epidemic, which is taking so many lives, and which they themselves started and propagate and continue behind the stratum of trying to abate it to a certain degree. I think, as I've said before on this program, it's as if you hired a bunch of arsonists to be the fire department of the town, and then you gave them the commission for every fire that they put out. And that's the kind of system that we have in this country, all up and down. That's sort of that thing with the firefighters is an understatement of what the reality is in this country, because it affects every branch of life. But the fact is that more and more people are coming to realize, that's why the ruling class seems to be so frightened about the whole notion of critical race theory. Well, critical race theory is only getting at the truth of American history and how it was shaped and how it in turn shaped much of the world around itself. And it reminds people like who actually built this country and who has nothing or very little to show for it except a proud heritage in a way. But what we need is a revolution in order to put the inherited wealth that has been created by the oppressed and exploited in this country into the hands of the oppressed and exploited. That is the overwhelming majority of regular people. And it takes a degree of organization and consciousness that we really have to build. So it's really great every week to hear the kind of discussion that goes on this program, this blog, telephone blog, as we call it, because it really has the information that people need to see why an absolutely inhuman and totally disgusting system like this can be permitted to keep going on and getting worse and worse in every way and not be stopped before. I mean, it's a question really of human survival or like that, which is tied in with wiping out the capitalist system, because if we don't wipe it out, it's going to wipe humanity out, all of us. Of course, starting and most intensely on the people that are most oppressed and exploited, but ultimately it will engulf all of humanity. Just look what they're doing with the worldwide climate. Look at the crisis that they had in Texas, because global warming allowed the jet stream from poles to break out and touch down there. And it shows that they're playing with fire and frost together to in a way that that will allow the rest of the world to be destroyed so that certain corporations continue to make a profit until it is. This is ridiculous that we're allowing it to, but the consciousness of the organization have to be built to actually overthrow it and replace it with a system based on an economy planned for human need and ecological soundness instead of just the profits of these corporations that are destroying the world.
Thank you once again, and we do look forward weekly to hear your analysis of what happened, what is happening. And tonight you gave us another gem, you know, comparing the inside with the outside, the system of imprisonment behind the walls and imprisonment on this side of the wall. It is the same. Thanks again, Sister Betty.
Well, as I said, Jericho has an analysis that supports our program. It's not just about political prisoners, but what made a political prisoner do what they did to become a political prisoner. Sister Ann, I think you sent out an email concerning how Trump has changed the Constitution. Can you give us one or two snippets from that? And then tell people how they can get on your email list.
Okay, that sounds good. This is actually from The Atlantic. It was written by a man named Jonathan Rauch. It's a very interesting article. And starts out by saying how the Constitution has been changed informally many times over the years. So, Amendment 1. No president shall be removed from office for treason, bribery, or any other crime or misdemeanor, no matter how high, should a partisan minority of the Senate choose to protect him. Okay, that's number one. Number two, congressional oversight shall be optional. No congressional subpoena or demand for testimony or document shall bind the president who chooses to ignore it. Right? And then Amendment 3, congressional appropriations shall be suggestions. The president may choose whether or not to comply with congressional spending laws, and Congress shall have no recourse should the president declare that his own priorities supersede Congress's instructions. The president shall have authority to make appointments as he sees fit without the advice and consent of the Senate, provided he deems his appointees to be acting temporary or otherwise exempt from the ordinary confirmation process. And Amendment 5, the last one, the president shall have unconstrained authority to dangle and issue pardons for the purpose of obstructing justice, tampering with witnesses, and forestalling investigations. That's just a little point, but the article itself is really amazing. So if people want to get on the e-list, there's two ways you can do that. You can send an email to nycjericho@gmail.com. That's nycjericho@gmail.com. And just ask to be put on our list, and we will add you on. Or you can go to jerichomy.org and write. One of the first things you'll see right on the upper left-hand side is a little form. Put in your name and your email and hit the subscribe button. And then we will also add you to our e-list. So that's two ways very easily that people can, you know, join our e-list. Because we don't, as Sister Betty said, we don't just send out things about political prisoners. We send out things related to, we send out things about prisons in general. We send out you know, interesting articles like that one, like how did all these things that Trump was doing affect the actual Constitution? And it does affect the actual Constitution. And, you know, it was a very interesting analysis that this man did. And I sent it out on the listserv because I thought that people would like to read it. And it's really good. So, you know, that kind of stuff we'll be sending out all the time. Anything we find that's really important, we'll put it out there so people can, you know, have something to think about.
And we got it.
Hey, thank you so much for that, Ann. And understand, due to the weakness of the Democratic Party, he didn't even have to make these amendments because the Democratic Party has a way of folding and saying we folded on behalf of the working class people, and we're telling the Democratic stand up on behalf of the Democratic Party.
Before we close out, I want to remind you, this weekend you can hear a wonderful seminar on fascism, neoliberalism, and the way forward. And this is on Black is Back Coalition's webpage. It starts at 12 noon on March 6th, this coming weekend. So we're asking you to tune us in. You'll probably hear Brother Ralph talk and a couple of other folks. Brother Ralph?
Yes, yeah, so thank you so much for tuning in this week. There is so much to talk about. We hope we cover issues that are relevant. And if not, please give us an issue that you feel is relevant. And I'm honored to be here with so many people who understand and are able to analyze what is happening to all of us. Brother Gomes, are you in the house? If so, your mic is open. I understand you are ill, and we are not to expect you to be on this week. And so we look forward to hearing from you next week. Sister Betty. And once again, you have spent an hour and a half with people who are trying, who are working, who have worked to make it a better world. Thank you.
I could say all the things that I should say, say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear. I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart, remove all the bars that keep us apart.